Genealogy by Tim, Season 3, Episode 8, recorded August 26, 2023. Lots of cycling, lots of gravestone picks, lots of archival discoveries. I run down the results of my genealogy expeditions this month on Genealogy by Tim. There were two cycling trips this month. One took place earlier on in the month of August. The other took place just a couple days ago. And both were highly productive. One of them, the earlier trip, wasn't even intended to be a genealogy trip, but it turned out to be. My old roommate called me up and asked if I'd like to join him on a 7 to 10 day tour from Philadelphia to our friend's farm in Livonia, New York. He and I took this trip about 15 years ago. And when he called, I was ecstatic and excited to join him for another trip. He likes to do a lot more preparation than I do. I'm a little more spontaneous, so I let him draw up all the maps, lay out the route. And he sent me the route ahead of time, but I didn't look too closely at it. I just said, yeah, I'm sure it's fine. I'm sure we'll have a great time. But what I didn't know until we were on the road was that his route from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania to Livonia, New York, passed through the city of Milton in Northumberland County, Pennsylvania, where some of my early Hogan Dobler ancestors branched off from the Lancaster family and settled a little bit further northwest of the others. 2 years ago, I took a cycling tour all the way out to Sunbury, Pennsylvania. When I was in Sunbury, I stopped by the courthouse. I checked out a lot of courthouse records and noticed a lot of the Hogan Dobblers that I was researching in Sunbury weren't familiar to me. And upon closer review, it turns out that they were living in Milton, which is also in Northumberland County. The two cities are just a few miles apart, but I didn't really have the time or energy to go just that little bit further a couple years ago, and I thought to myself, I will leave that for a future trip. So as we passed through the city of Milton, I said to my friend, I said, we've got to stop in these cemeteries. I've got ancestors buried there. And my friend, he's a really good sport about this stuff, and he's a bit of an adventurer, and he was happy to let me go off on my way. While passing through the town of Milton, we had some laundry to do. He stayed behind and did laundry. What a good sport. While he was doing laundry, I was off in the cemeteries snapping photographs of Hogan Dobler graves. The gravestone photos that I took in Harmony Cemetery in Milton, Pennsylvania, were those of Joseph Hogan Dobler and his wife, Ava Straub, and these are some of the earliest gravestones that I have had the pleasure of photographing. Joseph Hogan Dobler is the son of Nicholas Hogan Dobler, who was the original immigrant to America back in pre-revolutionary times. Nicholas Hogan Dobler died in 1768. His son, John Hogan Dobler, is my qualifying ancestor for admission to the Sons of the American Revolution. He was born in Switzerland in 1745 and died in Lancaster County in 1820. The gravestone photo that I took at Harmony Cemetery was that of John Hogan Dobler's younger brother, Joseph Hogan Dobler, who was born in 1756 and died in 1830. After pulling up stakes and moving his family out to Milton, which is in Northumberland County, northwest of Lancaster. I was able to photograph Joseph's gravestone and also the gravestone of his wife, the former Ava Straub. She was born in 1766 and died in 1818, making her gravestone older than his gravestone. The oldest gravestone I've yet to photograph belonged to their son, Nicholas, who apparently died as a child in the year 1815. And I was not able to discern from the gravestone when he was born. But if I had the chance to go back, I would bring some gardening equipment with me to see if there isn't any information on the stone that has been buried under the grass and dirt line. So those three gravestones were pretty amazing discoveries. There were also several descendants of Joseph and Ava, all of whose gravestones I was able to photograph, not only photograph, but also geotag. Now, these gravestones had already been photographed for Find a Grave. I like to think my photographs are a little better than the ones I typically find on Find a Grave. It was, in fact, the photographs that were up on Find a Grave that helped me to locate the graves within Harmony Cemetery. The office of Harmony Cemetery is not on site. The cemetery, I believe, is run by the city, and it is they who must be called for requests and information. And as I was passing through the city with my friend on our bicycles, we didn't really research ahead of time. I kind of had to go into the cemetery without a lot of knowledge of where the burials were, but I was able to use the backgrounds of some of the Find a Grave pictures to locate the graves. And I was able to take my own pictures, and I was also able to geotag the gravestone locations on Find a Grave. And that will make it much easier for those who come after me to find these gravestones. Interestingly, I encountered a flat tire between the laundromat and the cemetery, which turned out to be a blessing in disguise because I discovered about two-thirds of the graves that I expected to find. And as I was at the roadside within the cemetery, replacing my inner tube, gnashing my teeth, trying to get the bead of the tire onto the wheel, my eyes happened to fall upon the missing gravestones that I wasn't able to find earlier. So without that flat tire, I wouldn't have made all the discoveries that I did. Now, after my success at Harmony Cemetery, I said to my friend, well, let's be on our way. I've had my fun. There was a second cemetery that I wanted to visit, but we should get going. And my friend said, nah, we're here. Let's go visit this other cemetery. So he and I went to Milton Cemetery, also run by the city of Milton, and also without a office on site, and also relatively unprepared. He and I rode around the cemetery, and I said, I'm looking for a Dorothy Marshall, who died just a couple years ago in 2019. We did a loop around the cemetery, and it was he whose eagle eyes spotted the gravestone. And again, this was a situation where I was just about to give up. I was about to say, nah, I don't think we'll find it. And it was he who said, well, let's go up this way. Let's just do one more loop, and then we'll head out. And it was on that last loop that we discovered the gravestone. The Marshalls, Dorothy and Robert Marshall, are descendants of the Berry family, which isn't closely related to the Hoogendoblers. These are some Philadelphia ancestors who made their way out to Milton in the mid-20th century. So two fairly different branches of the family. I was able to research and discover their graves in Milton, Pennsylvania. And after Milton, my friend and I ventured north. We spent the night at Patterson State Park, which is 5 miles up the road from Cherry Springs State Park. Cherry Springs State Park is famous for being a dark sky state park in Pennsylvania. Our intent was to go to Cherry Springs State Park and view the dark sky. When we got there, the campground was full, so we settled for Patterson State Park, 5 miles up the road, and I'm not sure if that affected our visibility. I didn't get quite the view that I was expecting, but it had been cloudy for most of the day, so I appreciated any view that I could get. The clouds kind of just rolled right on out just as it was getting dark, so I was able to enjoy some view of the night sky. And then after Patterson State Park, it took us 2 more days to ride up to our friend's farm in Livonia, and we spent a couple days with them. I hadn't seen them in 5 years, so it was good to catch up, good to spend a couple days with them, and good on the way to make some family history discoveries. My second trip of the summer took place on August 24th. That was Thursday, just a couple days ago. And this was originally planned as a 4-day, 3-night trip, riding the cycle all the way to and from Lancaster and camping each night. And that's something I typically do each summer. But since I spent so much time away from home earlier in the month, I decided to take it easy this time around, and I pared the trip down to just a single day. And I did something I hadn't done before, and that is load my bicycle onto an Amtrak train that left Philadelphia at 5:20 in the morning and I bought a round trip ticket that departed Lancaster at 8:32 in the evening. So I was out of the house from about 4 in the morning until about 10:45 at night. And I don't drive, not yet anyway. So for a long time, the single day Lancaster trip was out of reach for me. I think the carry-on bicycle option on Amtrak is relatively new. I remember looking into this before and deciding that it was either impossible or impractical. But it now is possible for me to bring my bike onto an Amtrak train, spend a single day in Lancaster, and come home. Now, the costs aren't really much better. Tickets are $21 each way, plus an additional $20 fee for the bicycle. So all told, I spent $82 on the round trip ticket. If I find a good family campground, the per night charge could be about $40. So for about the same price as the Amtrak ticket, I could have rode out, camped 2 nights, and rode back. Now the ride out and the ride back would take a large chunk of those 2 days, and I would have that middle day to do all the research. I would get a little extra time. You know, when I arrive in Lancaster, there's still time to hit some cemeteries. So for about the same price, it could have been a 3-day, 2-night trip with a little bit more research time. But I decided to try something new, and that is complete the single day cycling tour of Lancaster. And now that I know that this is possible, I may do this a little more often. There may be a single day Lancaster trip during winter break. There may be a single day Lancaster trip during spring break. It all depends on what I discover throughout the course of the year and how eager I am to get back out there. So I laid out a few goals for this trip, and they were, 1, to photograph the gravestones of my nearest known mama ancestors in Lancaster. Also to photograph the gravestone of George Marley, who is the uncle of whom I believe to be my nearest living relative in Lancaster. I also wanted to research the grave of Peter Mama, whose date of death and place of burial don't seem to be known by those who have been researching this topic. I also wanted to find the original marriage records of Reverend J.J. Strine. Those marriage records have been typeset and published as a book, but I wanted to see the original handwritten copies. And then lastly, I wanted to meet my nearest living relative in Lancaster. Those were my goals for this trip. I was able to accomplish about half of those goals, but I made a couple other amazing discoveries in lieu of those goals that I did not accomplish. And let's run down what happened out there. So first, flat tire issues haunt me again. About 5 minutes off of the train on the Harrisburg Pike, I get a flat tire, and this time I'm kind of sunk because I did not remember to bring a spare tube. So I did the walk of shame from Harrisburg Pike into Center City, rearranged my daily plan. My original plan was to ride out to the cemeteries, take as many pictures as I could, and then ride back into the city to do research in the Archives and Historical Society. That plan had to be flipped, because when I got to Lancaster, it was about 7 in the morning. Bike shop didn't open until 10, and I was stuck with this flat tire. So I walked into town, started my research day at the Lancaster Archives, which open at 8:30, and I was able to research some intestacy records at the archive. And I was able to pull up letters of administration for Nicholas Hogan Dobler and Peter Mumma, both of whom died prior to 1800. These are my 2 known Lancaster immigrant ancestors, and these are some of the oldest documents I'm aware of on the family. And they give insight as to when these gentlemen died. Otherwise, that information might not have been known. The exact dates of death aren't known, but are estimatable from the date that these letters of administration were issued. And while I was there, in order to kill some time while waiting for the bike shop to open, I pulled up some letters of administration from the Klein family. And I wasn't entirely sure if these were people of interest to me, but while I was there, why not? So I had those records pulled up, and they were very interesting to see and will be added shortly to my family tree program. And after I finished there, I went to the bike shop, had my flat tire repaired. I had them repair the flat tire. I said, I've just about had it with flat tires. I will pay someone to fix this for me. And that took about 15 minutes. And from there, I went to the Lancaster County Historical Society, also known simply as Lancaster History. And here I intended mainly to ask about the Strine records and also browse the Lancaster Gravestone Database for any trace of Peter Mumma. This is Peter Mumma Jr., who died about 1850, who was the son of the immigrant Peter Mumma. And his 1850-ish death date is not known, nor is his place of burial known. I did not actually get to search this database because I was engrossed in what I found in the J.J. Strine records. Now, Reverend J.J. Strine was a pastor who moved about different congregations in the Lancaster area. He's been described as like a traveling pastor. Now, I own a hardcover copy of the personal marriage records of Reverend J.J. Strine, and I expected that to be at Lancaster History, but what I was not expecting were baptism records. And these records were typewritten on thin paper. They were not in published book form, but they seemed to be about as informative as the published book of marriage records. So I was able to flip through these records and just photograph any name that looked familiar for later review. And I'm sure those documents will turn out to be quite informative. And when I was done with those documents, I went to the information desk and I said, do you know the whereabouts of the original handwritten J.J. Strine records? They didn't show up in the library catalog. The woman at the desk was very diligent, and she emailed a couple knowledgeable people. And while we were waiting to hear back from these knowledgeable people, I struck up a conversation with a gentleman who worked for the Lancaster Historical Society since 1989, and he was pretty sure that the original Strine records were housed at Lancaster History. Turns out he was correct, and the reason these records didn't appear in the library catalog is because a lot of the library's holdings were in the process of being renumbered. But someone was able to pull up the original handwritten records written by Reverend J.J. Strine, and I was able to photograph the original handwritten marriage records of my ancestors, John Klein and Catherine Hogentogler, from 1830. It was November 16th, 1830, to be exact, that Reverend J.J. Strine put his pen to paper and recorded my ancestors' marriage. And I photographed only that record. I did not bother these archivists with lots of extraneous records. I photographed this one for inclusion in my First Families of Pennsylvania application for the Genealogical Society of Pennsylvania. And I saw the fragile condition of the books. So I said, that's just it. That's the one I want. I photographed also the outside cover of the book and the inside page where Reverend Strine wrote, this book is the property of Reverend J.J. Strine. So everyone knows what book it is that I photographed. And I will be making a PDF of that and including it in my First Families file. Now, when I was done that, this gentleman, whose name and contact information I should have taken down, but I didn't. He seemed to be a wealth of knowledge. But he referred me to the lesser-known records of Reverend Henry Schaffner. And he said to me, Reverend Schaffner's records were not as neatly written and organized as those of Reverend Strine. And they were written partly in English, partly in German. And this may be why they were never indexed and never published widely, but the Lancaster History had a photocopy of these records, the originals being stored at the Evangelical and Lutheran Historical Society, which is also in Lancaster, but I've never been there. I should go at some point. So, rather than researching the grave location of Peter Mumma, who died sometime around 1850, a pursuit that I thought was a long shot, I chose instead to study the pastoral records of Reverend Henry B. Schnafner. I think it's a B. And yes, these records were quite helpful, and the full helpfulness of these records is not yet clear to me. The names Mumma and Hogendahler appear throughout. They are in German, so it's hard to say exactly what's happening, but the great find of the afternoon in the Schaffner records was a death record for my qualifying ancestor for Sons of the American Revolution, John Hogendahler, who died in 1820. And the Schaffner records are interesting because they give pretty much all the information of a modern death certificate. It says when the person was born, it says who the parents were, when the person was married, whether the person has a spouse, also when the person died, age at death. Oftentimes, manner of death is also included. And lastly, the Bible passage that was read at his funeral. And a lot of this information was known, but known only from accepted Daughters of the American Revolution records of other descendants. So it was very compelling to see a contemporary account of the life and death of John Hogendahler. It says in this record, Columbia, I believe that may be the death place that is listed, although the DAR records of other descendants state the place of death as Mountville. So I'm not sure which of those is correct. And the other interesting thing mentioned in this record is that, now I don't understand the German on it, but I understand it said Nach 4 months. Nach is after. And I forget the German word for months, but after 4 months, I believe it's some kind of illness. But that's a detail that may otherwise have been very difficult to uncover, if not for the detailed records of Reverend Henry B. Schaffner, I believe. So I photographed a lot of the Schaffner records, not all of them. Again, any place I saw a name of interest, I took a photo of that page and brought them home for later review. But I can see myself in the future doing another single day trip all the way out there to Lancaster to simply photograph all of it. I mean, there's so much information in there, I don't even know the full extent of it. But that was an amazing discovery at Lancaster History. And I was there all the way until the library closed at 2 o'clock. And after that, I set about photographing gravestones for the rest of the day. One of my goals for the trip was to photograph the gravestone of my closest known Mumma relative, the gravestone that has Mumma written as the surname on the gravestone. And this I believe to be that of John C. Mumma, who is a cousin of Anna Mumma, who married Samuel Eisenberger back in the early part of the 19th century. And I was able to locate this gravestone at Silver Spring Cemetery. Again, the grave had already been photographed, but it wasn't geotagged in Find a Grave. John C. Mumma is a son of Frederick Mumma. Frederick Mumma is a brother of the Peter Mumma, who died sometime around 1850. His death date is unknown. John C. Mumma is a cousin of Anna Mumma Eisenberger. So it's not a particularly close relationship, but it may be the closest I'll find. Prior to that, I was able to photograph the gravestone of George Marley and his wife Anna at the Mountville Cemetery. And then lastly, I was able to photograph the graves of other Mumma descendants of Frederick Mumma at the Ironville Church of the Brethren Cemetery in Ironville, Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And these photographing efforts took a while because none of these cemeteries have on-site offices. I had to scour the cemeteries in search of these graves, and I was able to find pretty much everything I was looking for. and I was able to geotag them in Find a Grave to make future discovery easy for others. These efforts took me all the way up till about 7 o'clock in the evening, and I didn't even have lunch. I just went straight from the Lancaster Archive to the Lancaster Historical Society, and then cemetery, all the way till about 7 o'clock. And therefore, I did not get to meet my nearest living relative in Lancaster. I had wrote this gentleman a letter, but I did not hear back from him, and I did not bother him further. Maybe next summer, I'll take the next step and cold call him. But for the sake of time, I let it go this trip, and maybe something I'll do next trip. So after I was done with all the photography, I had a dinner for myself at the Windridge Cider Company in the city of Lancaster, and I highly recommend their flatbreads and their ciders, especially the black cherry cider, which I enjoyed immensely. And after I had dinner, I put my bike back on the train and was headed home. I was home by 10:45 that evening, so it was an immensely productive day, and I still haven't even gone through most of what I brought home with me, but that will be coming up in the next several days. All right, folks, that's all I have for you this month. School is starting this coming Tuesday, August 29th. I've got to be at school for professional development. The fun, I don't want to say the fun is over, because, you know, school can be fun in its own way if you approach it with the right attitude, but free time is done for trips anyway. But I do have a lot of photographs and memories to go through to organize, and I will let you know the progress of that in my next episode. Until then, keep on digging. Your next family history adventure awaits.